As you move into your older and wiser years, you may have questions about your finances, your health, or what to do for fun besides watching young people try to figure life out.
Oh, man, this guy's a moron!
The next hour is dedicated to you.
Only the good die young.
This is 50 Plus. Because women never age and old school will always be cool.
You know that only the good die young.
50 Plus. Brought to you by the UT Health Consortium on Aging. Informed decisions for a healthier, happier life. Here's Doug Pike.
Welcome aboard. Time for 50 Plus. I'm glad you're listening. I really am. Hope you've had a positive and productive week. And maybe one with a little less rain than we've endured here in Houston. It didn't get horrible, but twice in the middle of the night, I was awake. Well, once I was kept awake by thunder and lightning, and then once more, I was awakened in the middle of the night by thunder and lightning. That's the way it goes in springtime. Got a good show lined up for you today. We'll talk in a few minutes about elder mediation, which is something about which I know not a whole lot. Right now, to be honest, I've got a lot of questions for Dr. Barbara Manusso. She's a PhD, one of those kinds of doctors. And I'm sure we'll all gain something from that conversation. Then a little later in the show, I hope you'll stick around for, it's not the most exciting topic in the world. It's not beating the penny slots at the casino, but it's still important as we get a little older. We're gonna talk about wills. Something we all should deal with sooner or later. We're going to speak with attorney Tanya Knauth about wills, and specifically about an event being held here in Houston called Willathon that's put on by elder care attorneys and offers free basic wills for folks who can't afford them and for veterans, actually, I think, whether they can afford it or not, from the way I read the information. I'll check with her on that. On a lighter note, we're coming into spring in most parts of the country, and in addition to the allergies, which we addressed, was it this past week or the week before, with a doctor from the American Sinus Institute, I found out the difference between decongestants and antihistamines, and am now on a daily antihistamine regimen that's helping, actually. It's allowing me to breathe easier day and night. I'm sleeping a little better, too, I think. In any event, spring leading into summer soon enough. It's actually supposed to hit 90 degrees here in Houston on, I think it's Monday or Tuesday afternoon. I can't remember which. But it really doesn't matter because it's going to be in the high 80s on the day before and the day after. Now, sometime soon, I am going to get a doctor on this show who can tell me why it's getting tougher every year to deal with the heat. For heaven's sakes, I was born and raised in the South, right here in Houston. I spent 4 years as a little guy from the time I was about 10 and a half to 13 and a half or 14, somewhere in there, over in New Orleans, in Metairie, actually. And then we came back here. My dad got transferred over there for 4 years. We came back here. So I've been in this heat and humidity zone almost all my life. And it wasn't until I qualified for senior discounts at Denny's that summertime bothered me at all. And I can still do everything I've always done outdoors, but the price I pay for staying out there all afternoon or all day is just getting higher every year. I remember back in the 70s, maybe late 70s, I think, a summer when our high temperature here in Houston topped 100 degrees for 8 or 10 days in a row. My friends and I were loving it. We were very young, very tough. We loved it. You could get a tee time any day you wanted to be on a golf course, any golf course you wanted to get on. You could fish all day in wherever you wanted to fish without getting crowded out by other boats or other people. I can still put in 18, 27, maybe even 36 holes on a really hot day, but by the time I drive home, I can barely get out of the truck and walk into the house. I'm stiff, I'm dehydrated, and I just want to crawl into the refrigerator for maybe an hour or so, take a nap. That's a topic I'm definitely going to cover here soon. Why we wilt so much faster in the heat as we get older and what, if anything, we can do about it. That reminds me of an interview I did months ago, by the way, with a travel agent who specializes in trips for us, for old people. And by old people, I'm throwing myself in the group. I'm not that old, but we'll call it 50 plus. That's the name of the show. And for those of you who are listening on behalf of your parents, thanks for doing so. She recommended traveling only when it makes seasonal sense. There's no reason to put yourself in the middle of a brutal summer somewhere. If you've got the time, if you're retired, for heaven's sakes, just go when you want to go. Go when it's going to be pleasant. If you're a skier or a snowboarder like me, go ahead and go to the mountain resorts in the wintertime. But if you're not, and if you're not in as great physical shape as maybe you were 10 or 15 years ago, just avoid those temperature extremes. It'll be a lot nicer and a lot more pleasant. Go places in their spring and fall. So, as I mentioned, we'll talk about elder mediation and wills coming up today in the program. And I'm going to go find a cool wet towel maybe to put on the back of my neck, or at least to have in the golf bag next week. On that 90-degree day, I have a golf tournament. On the day before that, I have a golf tournament. And on Friday next week, I have a golf tournament. Oh, and on Thursday, I'm playing golf with my son. In the meantime, if you're looking for great sources of information of interest to all of us, you can check out UT Health's Consortium on Aging at uth.edu/aging. That's uth.edu/aging. They have great resources there. One I like is these, I think they're called Geriatric Gems and Palliative Pearls. They are short pieces broken into categories that are should be of interest to all of us. That's an easy one. Or you can try my friends at Senior Resource Guide. Homepage there is srgserv.com, srgserv.com. And hey, if you want to contact me with ideas for show segments you haven't heard here yet on 50 Plus, it's easy. Just send me an email, will you? I welcome them. I respond to them. I look forward to hearing from you, those of you who are old enough to remember a nickel candy bar. Doug Pike at iHeartMedia.com. That's my web, my email address, Doug Pike at iHeartMedia.com. Back in a minute, 50 Plus. Some days I feel like that's about as high as I could count on a bet, especially when it's been hot. I mentioned that earlier. Get home from a golf tournament, middle of summer, wondering all the way home why you stayed out there and hit so many balls beforehand and played and went out and pitched and chipped and putted and tried to make the most of the day. You wilted like a lily. Let's get Barbara Manusa. Hold on here. Push that button right there. Dr. Barbara Manusso, PhD. And it says here MPH. I know that doesn't stand for miles per hour. What does that stand for, Barbara?
That stands for a master's in public health.
Thank you. That makes way more sense than what I had first. Welcome to the show. I got to be honest. This is the first time I've actually heard of elder care mediation. What exactly is it that you do?
Oh, well, I'm glad to be able to inform you. Elder and adult care mediation is an opportunity for families to have a conversation that they haven't been able to have by themselves. The mediator helps facilitate their conversation, perhaps offer some ideas so that they can get some clarity on what's been keeping them apart. And it is for elders sometimes to make decisions on end-of-life decisions or sometimes even just later in life.
Yeah, I want to get into all of that with you, actually. Who's typically sitting at this mediation table other than yourself?
Well, the children generally of the person, if it's an elder person that the siblings perhaps haven't been able to make a decision about, and so it might be them, it might be grandchildren, it might be a neighbor that's lived next door to somebody for years.
I hadn't thought about that, yeah.
Yeah, it might even be a financial person. It might be a geriatric care manager. There's a lot of people that might come into the conversation, but generally it's the family.
Is it always a good idea to have the parents and the children at the table, or sometimes do you just say, okay, you wait outside for a minute, or maybe just don't bring mom and dad on this one?
No, well, if that's what the family should choose.
Right.
But our recommendation generally is if the conversation's about someone, that person should be present.
Sure. Just get everybody in there, and let them all kind of voice it and air it out. How often do you see families of elderly people kind of along this line, really, who are dealing maybe with a parent who has dementia or Alzheimer's or something else that keeps them from making their own decisions.
That happens pretty regularly. Yeah. And what might happen is that the kids that maybe live nearby, they don't notice it because it's kind of insidious. Mm-hmm. And then one of the other siblings might come visit and go, oh, my gosh, this is wrong, that's wrong. Have you noticed? And the person who's been maybe closer says no. And then sometimes it's just the opposite, where they realize the senior might not be able to be self-functioning anymore and might need some assistance.
And I'll play Captain Obvious here and suggest that it's better once you see something like that to just get everybody sitting down right now than to let it fester and boil and maybe somebody's out of town. Like you say, I was going to ask how you handle situations where somebody's from out of town, but that's easy enough with a conference call. Does having one or more children out of town tend to cause tension for the ones who are in town doing all the heavy lifting?
Yes, it very often mm-hmm. does, because everybody expects to be rewarded at one point, probably equally. Mm-hmm. But the people that are the caregivers are probably putting their lives on hold to a great degree to take care of somebody. So it's not really an equal distribution. And then the ones from out of town come in and start criticizing the caretaker. So, mm-hmm. And that's when the conversation needs to be held. And we use GoToMeeting and other visuals as well. But often the family ends up just flying in, and I prefer the face-to-face conversation.
Yeah, it's a lot easier and a lot more personal, I think. And it really gives people a chance to see the emotion that's being vented there. How many clients in mediation? I read somewhere that sometimes judges just get tired of listening to petty arguments and will send people to you.
Oh, absolutely. We get our referrals from facilities. We've gotten them from long-term care facilities. We get them from probate court. We get them from judges. We get them from social workers. We get adult protective services where something doesn't really rise to the level of abuse, but something's off and the family needs to talk. Mm-hmm. And so we have quite a few different resources and referral sources.
Mm-hmm. And other than flipping pages in a phone book or searching blindly online, how would somebody go about finding an elder care mediator if they didn't have one appointed for them or one suggested to them?
Well, the best way is to go online, mm-hmm. and there are different elder care networks that you can find, or you can go to mediate.com. And anybody that has been mediating a long time family cases, we also have a special training just to do elder mediation. So the elder mediator should have over 100 hours of mediation training. And if they don't, you shouldn't use them, because they have to be aware of all the different nuances and aging.
And that's a question you should ask before you contract with anybody for their services, huh?
Absolutely. And when in doubt, I mean, I'm a NUSO mediation, and I have many people we've trained. So
sure. We
have a very broad network of people all over the world. They're not just in Houston. I have a woman that just flew in from Lebanon.
Oh, wow.
Who's one of our elder mediators in, from Beirut. So they come from all over the world to be trained by us.
Let's get a big question out of the way, Barbara. On average, what's this service going to cost?
Well, we make it affordable for the family.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, on average, and we're willing to negotiate, but it's about $300 an hour.
Okay.
And it's not per person, but usually there's
three, four
people in the family. So they're divvying that up. Mm-hmm. You know, and most family mediations are from maybe 2 to 4 hours, probably tops.
Yeah, you wouldn't want this to go on forever.
No.
Do families usually decide pretty early on a timeline for this mediation? How many visits? Are you just going to sit down that one time and hash it all out?
Usually one time is fine.
Wow, okay.
Sometimes there's something they have to get information about or a resource
right.
they want to bring in, so it might be a continuing conversation. But most of the time, I know what they need from their phone, you know, the intake conversation.
Right.
And we set it up, and it's a one-time deal. And the session ends in a memorandum of understanding, which is a legally binding contract.
Good. Oh, okay.
So this isn't just a fluffy conversation.
Shooting the breeze, no.
No. And what happens is sometimes families get mad and they go to court. Well, their parent could be dead by the time they get a resolution.
Good point.
And so mediation is very immediate. They can do it within hours or days. And they have a contract. that they can look at in the dark moments that they feel they're being dumped on by their siblings, and reread what they had agreed to. And everybody agrees. There's nothing in writing unless everybody agrees. And
Dr. Barbara Manusso joining us here, elder mediator. Let's talk about some of the situations you help people work out. And I've got a list here. We'll kind of go down them. First of all, where's the best place for mom or dad to live? There really are several options in this category and several degrees of independence available as someone ages, aren't there?
Oh, there's many options. And Houston is replete with many, many options. And there's not a blanket statement for me to give you because every situation is so different. But overall, assisted living is sometimes a good start, and it gives the person before they're so impaired a chance to sort through their things and take some of the burden off the kids.
Yeah, that's an issue that I had with my own mother. She was leaning toward an assisted living facility, like an apartment in a fairly large complex. But by the time she made that decision, it was actually too late to take her there, and we had to kind of ramp up one level from there, unfortunately. Here's another one. Should mom or dad still be driving? This one's kind of tricky. How do you sit in a room with somebody and tell them they can't drive anymore?
Oh, that's very tricky. My father died at 97.
Wow.
And at 93, he bought a brand new car.
Woo, better for him. What did he buy? Something fast, I hope.
No. Ah. He just wanted blue. He wanted a blue car.
Very cool.
And it came out this electric blue. It looked ridiculous. It was a Ford. But it got to the point he would monitor himself and only drove certain hours of the day and would go to the store and go back and then sit and play with his lights from the kitchen.
Gosh.
And then when he went into assisted living, not with their choice, that was a move that we all had to garner together and make for them. Then the assisted living suggested he not drive anymore, and we sold the car. And it was hard because he was very independent. He was sharp right till 97, the day he just dropped dead.
Golly.
Beautiful, you know.
Yeah, he had a long run, no doubt.
He sure did.
My mom quit driving. She leased a car at, like, around, gosh, either late 70s or early 80s, and ran into somebody, and we kind of called it at that. Hey, I'm going to have to put you on hold for a couple of minutes. We'll come back and have some more to talk.
I've got
many more questions. Dr. Barbara Manusso joining us talking about elder mediation. We'll be right back with more 50 Plus after this.
Where been there and done that actually means been there, done that.
And this is just the beginning.
This is 50 Plus with Doug Pike.
Welcome back. Thanks for listening. Hope your day's going well. Mine is. I'm moving through this show, and then I'll go do something fun. You can kind of count on that. Dr. Barbara Manusso rejoining the program. We're talking about elder mediation. And it's something I knew very little about when we started this conversation. I'm learning now. During the break, I got on the phone, and you mentioned certification as it relates to elder mediation. Can you explain what you meant?
Yes, I can.
Thank you.
Elder mediation is such of a high and personal level of dealing with the clients that other mediators are never – you have a certificate – by state statute, but you don't have certification. Certification means that the mediators need to have a certain level of competence of education and that they take an exam to show that they are competent in the different areas that are important to the aging and to the families.
Okay, thank you. That clarifies that.
Very important.
Let's talk about something else that I understand you get into for these families a lot of times, and that's just kind of what level of care, what kind of care they're going to need. That's just another big can of worms to open, isn't it?
Well, it is and it isn't. And again, this is where the family conversation is so important.
Right.
Sometimes there might be a sibling that decides to move into the house to take care of mom. And I had a case like this, and the guy was actually taking mom's monies.
Ooh,
and
that's not good.
So I did call Adult Protective Services, and
good.
It was true. And the other siblings had already called me because they had suspected it. Mm-hmm. So it's that sort of a situation. So that's why a conversation with everybody at the table, make something that everybody's comfortable with, and take care of their mom. You have a legal responsibility to take care of your parent.
Yeah, the person in charge of the money, and this is where I was. My sister's out of town. I was here, and my wife and I helped manage her finances for the last year, year and a half of her life. And my sister, trust me, I trust my sister. It wouldn't have mattered to me which of the three of us, she or my wife or me, was doing this. But I can see where that would be a big sticking point, because I'm guessing if you've got three or four people sitting there and there's even one of them who's kind of a little bit shady, nobody wants them touching the checkbook, do they?
No, they don't. And sometimes you don't know who's shady until somebody's ready to die.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And that's been what people find. I did a program down at NASA. I do a lot of employee assistance programs. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. I couldn't get out of the building because people were coming out of the shadows. And these are very well-educated people. And all of a sudden, their family member might have been handling mom's finances for years. And all of a sudden, they didn't trust them.
Wow.
So,
and when it comes down to paying for stuff that mom or dad can't pay for, let's say mom and dad have kind of tapped out everything they had, then you get in discussions, I guess, with family members and try to figure out who's going to pay for what, because it's really not fair for the person with the most to pay the most. That just doesn't take into account the reason that person with less is in the situation they're in, does it?
No, it doesn't. And that's, again, a conversation that's very individual for every family.
Oh, gosh. Now let's talk about why they should, who should have financial or medical powers of attorney. That can get tricky too, I'm guessing.
Yes, it is. And again, that's very different for every family. And the best thing that a parent can do for their family and for their legacy is to appoint somebody to handle their financial and their medical power of attorney while they have their capabilities. Because when they're not so capable, then there's distrust from the other siblings. And also, what I see a lot in our elder mediation is the parents do such a bad job managing or parenting that they actually pit one kid against the other. And so here you have these adults that are in their 60s and 70s with their own problems. They're pitted against each other. The sibling rivalry is very ugly.
Yeah, how do you keep old wounds and old news from being brought up during these negotiations?
If it bubbles up, it bubbles up, and that's what a well-trained mediator knows how to handle.
That's why you get all that training, huh?
That's exactly right.
You gotta know how to stop a fight before it starts.
That's exactly right.
In your experience, Barbara, what's it like emotionally for parents to see their children bickering over this stuff?
Well, it's shocking for the parents. Sometimes it's very, very fretful for them. And I think it creates more stress and hastens their demise in some cases. It's very, very sad. It's very, very sad when people and I had two sisters not so long ago. I understood that mom was dead.
Oh, wow.
And they were working on the estate. And then three sessions in, one of the sisters happened to mention that mom was in a nursing home not so far from here.
Oh,
she said, would you like
to
meet with mom? I said, I thought she was dead. They were divvying up her estate.
Holy mackerel.
And the third sister, they said, oh, she doesn't matter. She's not interested.
Wow.
I said, oh, no. Because will you make sure that you get all the siblings?
Yeah, you can bet she's about to get interested, huh?
Oh, bet she was interested. Now, a lot of stuff goes on, and because you're getting a contract. This is
Absolutely.
A legally binding document at the end of the mediation. So, again, you've got to be a very experienced elder mediator to
Holy
handle
mackerel.
These cases.
But so we talked a good bit. Dr. Barbara Manusso joining us here. We talked a good bit about what mediators do. Let's flip the coin and talk about some of the things that you don't do. And I guess first and foremost, you don't actually make the decisions for the family. You just kind of lead them down that path, right?
Yes, and I don't even lead them.
Mm-hmm.
Might show them options that they can explore, but I do not lead the families at all. I don't have a dog in there.
Yeah, you just put them on the trail.
I just show them what options are available for them to make healthy decisions, and that is our role and the way we do it. That's part of the expertise of being an elder mediator.
It's that 100 hours. There it is. It's coming back again.
Yep.
And you're not. I found a list of these things that you don't do. You're not a therapist either, are you?
I am not a family therapist, and if I feel the family needs that, we will make some resources available to them. I'm not a financial advisor, but I can give them heads up on things they might want to talk to a financial advisor about.
And you know, I saw here on this list I looked at, Barbara, that some mediators are attorneys, many are not. But the long and the short of it is, it said that anybody who wants to have their lawyer there with them is welcome to do so. But I'm guessing that would put everybody else in a little higher state of anxiety about what's being discussed. Am I right?
No, not at all.
Really? Okay.
And I'll tell you why. A lawyer and a mediator are two different functions.
Right.
It's like being a cook and a veterinarian.
Okay.
Unless you're cooking the dog. You know, they're
golly.
Two separate businesses.
Where are we? Wait a minute.
Right, right. But if it's two separate businesses, a lawyer cannot act as a mediator, or a mediator cannot act as a lawyer. And so if somebody wants to bring their lawyer with them to a mediation, they're welcome to, but the other parties would also be notified of it, so they would have the same option. And most of the time, lawyers don't come, because then the party has to pay for their lawyer, which is a lot more expensive than just paying for the mediator.
On top of, yeah,
that's
on top
right.
of,
and usually the lawyers just send the parties, the families, to the mediator. They don't come.
Mm. We're just about out of time here, Barbara. I apologize for that, as I'm really enjoying this. This whole process really is very emotional. How many times have you had to call a timeout because tempers were about to boil over?
I let tempers boil over.
Oh, okay.
That's a very healthy part of conflict when people need to vent.
Man,
so I don't worry about that. That's why, again, we're trained as elder mediators, and we handle that.
You know, I said last week that I was going to get a little bell and put it in here, and every time I learned something, I'd ring that bell, but I think it would just become distracting at some point. Dr. Barbara Manusso, thank you very much for your time today. I have learned a ton. If I had that bell, I'd be ringing it as loudly as it would ring. Thank you very much for your time. How can people get in touch with you?
Thank you very much. It's Manusso Mediation, and it's manusso.us. 713-840-0828.
Thank you a lot.
Thank you very much.
Back with more 50 Plus right after this.
What's life without a nap?
I suggest you go to bed and sleep it off.
Just wait until after the show's over. Back to Doug Pike as 50 Plus continues.